Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Live Fundraising Success webinar, A Big Picture Look at Donor Retention, sponsored by CBS Global. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, editor of Fundraising Success and the host of today's event. Donations are great, aren't they? Where would your nonprofit be without them? But one-time gifts can only shine for so long, and if you don't follow up and get that donor to give again and again, and best yet, commit to continued giving, you'll wind up losing more donors than you get, and that's never a good thing. Today's speakers will help you eat, drink, dream, and breathe retention. But before I introduce them, let me point out a few quick tips to help you make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions either during the webinar or at the end of the hour. You can send them in at any time, and we'll get to as many of them as we possibly can. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Okay, on to the main event. Here today to discuss donor retention, we have Pamela Barden, Fundraising Strategy and Creative Consultant at PJ Barden Incorporated, and Jeff Johnson, Account Manager at L.W. Robbins. Also sitting in as a guest moderator is Brett Ridge, Senior Solutions Manager to Nonprofits at our sponsoring company, CBS Global. He'll be fielding your questions at the end of the presentation. So with the introductions out of the way, I'll turn things over to Pamela and Jeff.
Thank you so much, Margaret, and thank you all of you for joining us today. We're going to be talking about retaining donors, and unfortunately, the first slide that you're looking at right now has some very, very sobering realities. These come to us from Target Analytics' Donor-Centric Index of National Fundraising Performance for the third quarter of 2011. Wow, that's a mouthful. But let's look at these statistics for a minute. Acquisition of new donors in their survey has fallen 11.5% in the last 5 years. And to make matters worse, in 2010, repeat donor retention was only 70%, meaning that donors who gave in donors that gave in 2009, only 70% of them gave again in 2010. And also, new donor retention, first-time donors who gave a second gift, was only 27%. What that means is that even if you are a top performer and you have great donor retention rates, you're still going to need to replace 20 to 60% of your donor file every year just to stay even. Donor attrition will eventually reduce your donor file to zero unless you proactively take steps to replace the donors you will lose over time. So, as you acquire new donors, you're going to have to first replace what you're losing, and then you can actually expand your donor file. So the question is, when should you start thinking about donor retention? The answer, before you acquire the donor. So why is that? Well, first of all, habits that are formed with the first gift often stick, and you may have to recreate that experience to get repeat gifts. For example, donors who are acquired via direct response television may not be responsive to your direct mail, e-appeals, or even your newsletter. Also, donors who give to get a premium or give out of guilt because you send them a freemium may not give again without a premium or a freemium to motivate them. I teach fundraising at a couple of universities, and in every class, at least a quarter of the students admit to giving to a charity if they get address labels. They usually give around $10. They tell me that they would feel guilty using the labels if they didn't pay for them. But realize that many of these people are not really donors. They are buyers. You send them a usable premium, and they will pay you for it. Now, please don't hear that I'm anti-premiums. There's a place for them in our fundraising programs. You just need to weigh the consequences before you make a final decision about your acquisition mailings. And, in fact, there's nothing wrong with only sending a donor mailings a few times a year with address labels if that's what she has shown you inspires her to give. Just be careful to monitor this so you don't end up spending all the money he or she sends on cultivation that isn't working.
Pamela, this is Margaret. Can I interrupt for just a second?
Sure.
I see one of our attendees was asking if you can provide the link to the study that you just referenced. Is that something that possibly we can send out in an email afterwards?
Yes, I can give it to you, Margaret, afterwards, and I'll be glad to send that out.
Okay,
sorry,
great.
You can send it out, yes.
We'll do that. We'll do that.
I don't have it right now. Okay, so donors are going to stop giving for various reasons. And every nonprofit, big or small, whether you have 500,000 donors or you have 5,000 donors, donors are going to stop giving. Their reasons are varied. They go on a fixed income. They grow out of your focus. For example, their children graduate out of your program. Or they're just forgetful. Some of them move out of the area benefiting from your nonprofit. They die, or they give control of their money to a family member, or they hear something that makes them not want to give to you anymore. That could be something true or not, but they hear something that leads them to stop giving. There are so many outside factors that you can't control. So let's focus on what we can control, and that is making sure we give them plenty of reasons to keep giving to your nonprofit. So let's think of it this way. Every mailing list, no matter how big or how small, really has only 3 donors every year. Every person who gave to you in 2011, for example, fell into one of these categories. And I'm going to talk about this in terms of calendar year because that's how our donors think about giving. They're not thinking about their a fiscal year. They're thinking about, who did I give to this year? So you have 3 donors. The first one is someone who, they were a first-time donor in 2011. Their first gift to you ever came in 2011. Your second donor is the one who gave to you the prior year as well. In other words, he or she donated in 2010, and they also donated in 2011. Now, they may have been donating the 25 years prior to that, but for the sake of this, they've donated at least those last 2 years. And your third donor is the one who you recovered in 2011. They had given to you in 2009 or earlier. They didn't give to you in 2010, so they were lapsed, and you recovered them in 2011. They were one of your success stories. So as you plan how you're going to retain these 3 groups of donors, your strategic planning has to revolve around these 3 questions that you see on the screen right now. How are you going to get a second gift from your first-time donor? Remember, a huge percentage of them don't give. So how are you going to get more of them to give a second gift? And how are you going to keep your renewed donors giving year after year? How are you going to keep them from stopping giving to you after a certain number of years? And finally, how are you going to reactivate all your lapsed donors?
Hey, Pamela. I'm sorry, it's Margaret again. I just want to break in for a second because we're getting a lot of questions about the slides, and I want to respond to that so that our attendees can really just focus on listening so they don't have to worry about it. You can click on the download slides widget right now to download the slides for the presentation. It looks like a folder. So if you do that, you will get a copy of the slides, so you don't have to worry too much about taking a whole lot of notes because you can get the slides. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pamela.
That's quite all right. Let's first take a look at how we're going to plan to keep our new donors. First of all, make sure your acquisition reflects your organization. You absolutely want to go out with your strongest program, but be very careful that you don't sell the donor on something that you can't deliver again. So make sure the funding request is something that is an ongoing project or activity that you can repackage in the future in your direct mail. You can report on it in your newsletter. You can feature it on your website. Next, reseat your first-time donor quickly, no matter how small their gift. Think of this as being tested. How quickly you thank the donor can influence how he or she views your organization in terms of worthiness of future giving. You want to basically take care of donor remorse. It's the same idea. When we buy a new car, we're watching everywhere and going, wow, look at all those other people who have the same car. I made a smart decision. But by the same token, we want to send out a quick email and let our new donors, or I'm sorry, a quick receipt and let our new donors know how much we appreciate them. Also consider providing information just for them. Develop a welcome kit. This isn't just sending them your general brochure, but it's copies specially for new donors that is very friendly, no jargon, no acronyms, and it explains your programs and your successes. It tells great stories about wonderful things you've done because donors just like me have been supporting them. And then what about incentivizing them? In other words, should you offer a small gift for giving again in 30 to 60 days? This can have a strong influence on renewal rates, and it's worth considering. But keep the incentive mission-focused and low-cost. For example, a bookmark made by beneficiaries of your project would be a very good incentive. And another strategy is to think about sending your greatest hits first. In other words, have a mailing strategy that goes for the first 90 to 180 days that sends out winner direct mail packages and e-appeals, your strongest offers, your best packaging. Another option is to send out a series of email communications. This is often a good strategy for donors acquired online, and introduce the donor to your various programs. You can also call attention to features on your website, encouraging them to become more engaged with you by interacting that way. If you don't get a second gift in 90 days from a first-time donor, statistically your likelihood of getting another gift is nil. So make those first 3 months impossible to ignore. You definitely want a receipt that is written just for your new donors. The letter or messaging copy needs to welcome them and let them know you are genuinely grateful for their gift. But watch your language. Did they join the family? Are they a member? If you brought them on board with this language, it's fine to use it again in the receipt. But if you didn't, all of a sudden implying a relationship that may be more than they bargained for could be a deterrent to future gifts. Make sure your wording is consistent with what they think they signed up for. Here's an example of a great donor receipt. This was for a new donor. There's the same format is used with existing donors as well, but there's some great features here for new donors. The photograph of the tiger, by the way, was printed on the back of the form, a full 8.5 by 14 inch photograph. I confess I was so intrigued by this that I gave a second gift just to see if they rotated different animals. I thought it was such a strong way of engaging you in the mission of World Wildlife Fund. But let's take a look at the middle section of this receipt. On the left, in the green box, they tell me all the reasons to visit their website. There's things I can download, there's a photo gallery, there's information. It's a really nice bit of information for a new donor. So it makes a visit to their website really sound pretty exciting because of all the great content on there. And then on the right, they offer a premium for a second gift within 30 days. The offer is that if I match my initial gift, they will send me a premium. And since I've gotten a premium for my first gift, they're enticing me with another premium. For donors who renew year after year, most important thing is to be careful not to take them for granted. So you want to surprise them once in a while with perhaps a phone call, the phone call that just says thank you. This may be because they've given to you for 3 years in a row, or they have given a cumulative of $1,000 over the last several years. Your goal is to keep the romance alive, as it were. Let them know that you appreciate them today as much as you did when they first said, I do, or more likely, I will give. So with donors who've given multiple years, we have to really surprise them with our appreciation. Studies also show that donors who give via multiple channels, for example, they give online and through direct mail, give more often and give more money. So mix up your techniques and provide enough variety to be fresh and inviting. As you do that, keep the look familiar, but also keep it interesting. If you decide to create a special donor recognition program, don't design it in such a way that it no longer looks or sounds like your organization. Make sure the very elements that made them fall in love with you in the first place still exist. Of course, this is not an excuse for boring your donors to death. That is not going to help your donor retention. Provide variety, freshen up your look from time to time, and your donors will be more likely to stay engaged. And then for your renewing donors, do some research to see if there is a potential problem point and proactively and creatively solve for that. Let me show you a couple examples. First, this is an organization I work for, and we were very concerned about attrition. We were losing donors. Some computer work showed that after giving for 3 years, more donors were likely to stop giving than at any other point in their relationship with us. So we created a program to honor them after 3 years of consecutive giving. They didn't get pulled into a separate mail stream. They simply got a letter in the spring thanking them for their consistent giving and honoring them with a membership card to this newly created program. In addition to this welcome letter, the only other time they heard about this group was in the fall if they hadn't given and were in danger of losing their membership. The result? Greatly improved donor retention. Now, don't rush back to work and create a program for 3-year-plus donors. You have to find out where your danger point is. Is it 4 years? Is it 2 years? Is it after the third gift? You need to find where your danger point is and solve for that. Now, this is a similar program developed by a university. They have what's called the Green and Orange Society, and it recognizes donors who give consistently. They have some nice copy introducing the group. It reads, "While not everyone can give $1 million, everyone can give something. And when everyone does give what they can, the impact is immeasurable. Your loyalty makes a difference at the University of Laverne. The Green and Orange Society recognizes donors to Laverne Annual Giving who provide consistent support at any level over 3 years or more. The recognition that members receive is to have their name listed online. It's a very simple program to administer, I would think, but it's a good way to recognize donors and add value to their relationship with the nonprofit. Now, this slide shows an email I received from CARE. This was one of those things that was just a reinforcement of how valuable I was to them over my years of giving. It's simply thanking me for giving. They've embedded a video clip. They've kept the message very simple. This, again, is probably fairly low cost because it's electronic, but it's a way to encourage renewed donors to re-engage with you and to keep renewing their giving year after year. Let's face it, we never get tired of hearing thank you as long as it's sincere. This brings us to our lapsed donors, those people who stopped giving. There has to be a deliberate, ongoing plan for reactivating them. Don't wait until they've forgotten who you are. So first of all, don't just do the same thing. It hasn't been working, so don't just keep doing it. Although it often gets attributed to Dr. Phil, it was actually Albert Einstein who said, "Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is insanity." So let's not be insane. But also, don't keep going when it's no longer profitable. Monitor every lapsed donor activity to be sure it's netting you dollars and donors. So for first and only time donors, begin a serious reactivation effort at 6 months. Give it one last great effort. Tell them how excited you were when they gave their first gift and how concerned you are that they didn't give again. Remind them of all the great things you do. Plead a little bit if you have to. For donors who have given to you multiple times and then stopped, begin a serious reactivation effort around 9 months, but no later than 13 months. Remember, donors seldom keep that close of tabs on when they last gave, and many just won't realize how long it's been since their last gift. every year when I do my income tax, I'm surprised by nonprofits I didn't support. I would have sworn I'd supported them. So don't let it go too long. Tell them things like, Mrs. Jones, it's been over a year since we last heard from you, and frankly, that concerns me. Is there something we did that made you stop supporting our work? Next, show them. We focus on need and fundraising for good reason. It works. But with a lapsed donor, also show them the amazing results you have achieved since they first gave. Tell some great stories about changes made possible. Photos can help tell the story, so consider a special web feature that is a photographic success album. And finally, surprise them. Send unique and unexpected messages. Again, don't just repeat what they've ignored for the last year or more. Call them and tell them about a new and exciting project you are undertaking and ask them for a gift. Surprise them with some new things and some exciting opportunities. Here's a great example of an email I received in an effort to reactivate me. Because I received a premium when I was first acquired, as I mentioned earlier, they offered me another premium. Further down in the email, they reminded me of the benefits of being a member of the World Wildlife Fund. The subject line, we want you back. This next example is much lighter on copy. The subject line and the headline are, we miss you, very compelling. And there's a really powerful photo. This little boy is looking right at me with that poignant look. I also like that instead of a give now button, the button reads, rejoin the fight. It's a good effort at trying to reactivate a donor. So as you're thinking about your lapsed reactivation, your getting a second gift from your donor and keeping your donors renewing year after year, there's a couple of numbers you have to know about your donor file if you're going to successfully retain these donors. First of all, what is your second gift renewal rate by acquisition source? Some sources renew more frequently. This information can be a big help as you plan your donor acquisition budget and as you consider your efforts to get a second gift from your donors. Secondly, know the lifetime value by source, or the long term if you can't get the lifetime, meaning at least 5 years, hopefully, so that you know which source of new donors is more valuable. Again, that helps in planning acquisition and also helps you know where to put your reactivation budget. Finally, what is your lapsed reactivation renewal rate? It costs us money to renew a lapsed donor. Once they renew, are they continuing to give or are they just lapsing again? There's a point where it isn't profitable to keep on renewing them if they don't stick with you, so figure out where that point is and strategize accordingly. And now I'm going to turn this over to Jeff Johnson, who will continue this topic with a discussion of monthly giving programs and mid-level donor strategies. Jeff?
Thank you, Pamela, and thank you for all the slides. There was a lot of good detail in there. Well, hello, everyone. I'm going to be talking about mid-level giving and monthly giving. One of our clients is Lighthouse International. And they're a charity that works with overcoming vision impairment through rehabilitation, education, and research. They're a great little charity, but they're a small organization. So just because they're small doesn't mean that they can't get into mid-level donors. So what we did for them is we invented a low-maintenance mid-level donor club called the Beacon Society. What mid-level donors do is we're trying to develop a different group of donors. These are people who, while they're part of the main donor file, they're what could be considered the core of the donor file. And trying to figure out who they are is really important to be able to grow them as a group, which will help grow your organization. A lot of times, though, trying to figure out who exactly are these people can be the hard question. So what we do for our clients is we run a full file audit. The file audit allows us to be able to get in to see who these donors are. And in Lighthouse's case, it was people that were $100 plus. With different organizations, you're going to find different areas for where the mid-level groups come in. Some people use cumulative giving history, some use highest recent gift, or there's other criteria. I've seen mid-level clubs come in at $50 plus or $100 plus, or even for one organization it was $500 plus. But it really depends on who your organization is and who your donors are, and you kind of have to let your donors guide who's going to be part of this program. But the most important part of this is to get the buy-in from the senior management within the organization. Because this is a long-term strategy and a long-term investment, you really need to have the people at the top as your partner going into the program. Now, the next slide, it shows a sample of what we did to, for the outer envelope of the Beacon Society. You'll see that there's a high touch. It's a closed face. This is a cream stock. I'm not sure how well the slides are coming through, but there's a cream stock, which gives it a little bit of a nicer feel than just your white. There's a first-class stamp, and we use something. Some people, we call it Gen Pen. Some people will call it Auto Pen. There's Real Pen. There's all different types of names for these things, depending on the organization that you use. But it effectively gives you pen feel, and there's fonts and signatures that are created along with it, which really enable a piece of mail to be delivered, and it looks just like somebody sat down and wrote it. And these organizations, if you haven't used them, actually do pull out, and they use pens themselves as part of the print process. The next slide shows the outer. It shows that it's a. How do I describe this? It's a note card piece. And what you have to do to envision this is the front of the note card you see there with the three pictures. And then as you open it up, you see the full letter that's laying out there now in front of you. The note card lays out the giving levels and the gift linkages to show the donors who and what we're asking them to give. And then within this, the auto pen that we used, the same type of font that's used on the outer envelope is then used in the PS so that it matches, and it gives it that one more high-touch feel to where a recipient is going to look at this, and they could easily think and believe that the signature of what's on the outer envelope matches what's inside, and that gives it that feel that someone took the extra effort because they're important to then spend that extra time and money to hand address and hand PS that piece. And then there's the back of the note card. Again, it repeats the giving levels and the benefits that go along with those giving levels. And then finally, to finish off the package, what you've got is a first-class stamp on the reply envelope. So it's one more thing to show this donor how important they are to bring that donation back in. Now, this piece is something that's this is a one-off, once-a-year type of piece. This is not a piece that you're going to be doing each and every month. This is something to kind of kick off the program, to introduce it, and then to follow this up with some additional targeting or targeted materials. So how do you promote a mid-level program once you've got this great package that's gone out the door that's fairly expensive with considering the postage stamps you've got there? Well, what you can do is you can use your renewal campaigns. These are campaigns that are just you're mailing monthly, and you can add a little something to them to enable them to become more of a mid-level feel, whether that's an insert inside a renewal campaign or whether that's copy that's inside the letters that just talk about the benefit that the benefits they're going to receive or the benefit level of where they are in terms of the type of donation that they gave, just to acknowledge them in the renewal letter and then to ask for another gift. Also, within the acknowledgments themselves, the acknowledgments are a great way to talk to donors and give them that touch of now you're part of this donor program, and to tell them inside the acknowledgment that they're part of X program. Cool. So in addition to while you're promoting your mid-level program, the other things that you can do is you can add a URL. You can include linkages to a homepage. You can introduce the program and just continue to show the giving levels within the web. One final thing that I really strongly recommend that everyone consider. On these letters that are going out to your mid-level program donors, you want to make sure to include someone in your organization that these donors can speak to. And it's got to be a real person with a real email address and a real phone number. The vast majority of these donors will not use the email and will never call. But the 3 or 4 people or 10 people that you have in a year that are part of a small program that do reach out and do touch that person, it gives them that extra bit of touch. And those donors will become highly valuable to you because they know they have the ability to reach out and to touch you as an organization. The other thing you can do is you can promote this in newsletters and editorials and other places, but the real recommendation here, I think, on this slide that I would tell everyone is the email and phone number is really something to strongly consider. Next, I'd like to talk about monthly giving strategies. One of our clients is the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, and the name kind of speaks for what they did, for what they do. They're an organization dedicated to type 1 diabetes. So looking at their monthly giving program, what monthly giving programs in general will do is they allow you to establish a program that doesn't cost you a lot of money once you have donors up and giving. The retention rates are usually really high. Most are above 80%. Some are even above 90%. Obviously, giving frequency increases because you're going to get at least 12 gifts in a year. These people have extreme high long-term values because of the retention rates that they keep year over year and because they're consistently giving. And these people are also types of people who will give you additional gifts on top of their monthly gifts if you ask them. Another thing that we've started to use is sometimes these multi-donor people are really good plan giving prospects. It's one more plan giving prospect to think about. There are lots of others, but this is another area to definitely delve into, because if somebody's willing to give to you monthly, they're probably willing to think about you in terms of a plan gift. So how do you launch a program like this? What we'd recommend is creating an invitation-style package, kind of a package where you're building a brand. You're naming the program, you're creating a logo that goes with the program, and you're kind of announcing this program to your donors. You're telling the donors how it will lower their cost of fundraising from them and will enable their donations to become more valuable because they don't have to reach out to them every month. It's also easy for the donors because while you're talking to the donors, you need to put yourself in the donor's situation. A donor wants to be a donor, but they also have a busy life. And so explaining to them that this is easier than what they're currently doing is another benefit to the donor. Some organizations use upfront premiums in these packages. I've seen them work on both sides. It's something to consider. If you're going to start it, you can start it without and then maybe test into a premium package. The package I'm going to show you does include a premium, and it's worked really well for JDRF. So now we're going to talk about the implementation of these programs. Who do you talk to when you're looking at the programs themselves? And what you have is you've got to think about your donor select here. And the donor select within a monthly giving audience is really very important. What you have to look at is you have to look at years on the file of that the donor's been there, whether it's a donor that's been there 3, 4, or 5 more years of consistent giving on the file. You also want to look at donors who have given multiple times within those years. This isn't necessarily looking for a donor who's giving a lot of money. You're looking for frequency here. So frequency is what really drives this. And that's what we found works really well. In order to calculate how much you ask for, what I would do and what I've done for my clients is I've had a cumulative data field created. Within that field, say that the donation is $100 of what they've given through the 4 gifts in a year. They've given you 4 $25 gifts. What you can do is then take that $100 and divide it by a number like 10 or 11, which is going to give you a $10 ask as your first gift ask, then you want to bring it up to like a 15 and a 20, because you want to create an ask which basically gives you at least what they've given in the past and maybe a little bit more, but isn't necessarily a stretch for them financially. Because if they've given you 100 in 4 gifts, they can afford probably to give you 110 in 12 gifts. And then over time you can ask for additional donations and raise that monthly gift ask up. In addition, what you want to do is you want to be able to send these people a branded acknowledgement that uses that logo and uses the branded treatment that's on the invitation package that lets them know that they're now part of this organization that they joined. So having that brand and having that acknowledgement is something that's really key. The thing that you need to prepare for in terms of your staff is expired credit cards and all the stuff that goes along with that. You need to have someone ready to go to be able to call these people and say, hey, your credit card is going to expire next month. And you want to be on the front end of this. You don't want to wait for the card to expire and then call them to say, hey, your card expired. You want to call and say, hey, your card is expiring in 2 months or next month. Because credit card companies are sending out their new credit cards well in advance of when these expire, and you need to be thinking about doing the same thing to stay in front of those donations so that you don't lose a month of donations. And then what you want to do with these donors is you want to be able to plan out what are your top 2 or 3 mailings in a year. And you want to make sure that you're still mailing these people your top 2 or 3 mailings per year. You don't want to pull them completely out of the mail stream, but you want to make sure that where you're raising 30 or 40% of your money, which a lot of times is in your top 2 or 3 mailings, these people are still receiving each year. So here's the JDR package, just to give you guys a picture of the way this looks. So the outer envelope has kind of a personal invitation approach. The letter speaks to how important the donor is, and that's where the bolding there, and really kind of calls out to the donor the way the importance of this program and the importance of them as a donor. Now, the next slide here shows you what we call a hybrid reply slip. We've found that these hybrid-looking reply slips work for both a monthly giving mailing like you're seeing here, and then in another slide I'll discuss hybrids for renewal series. But let me talk about this package. What you have in the top left is a insert, which is a little magnet, and then on the back of that is just the piece that where those pictures of the three children are. The magnet's a premium that I don't want to call it a guilt measure, but if somebody joins, they're going to put it up on the refrigerator. But if somebody doesn't join, they're probably not going to put that up on the fridge. So it's a way to try and bring in that donation. And then the reply slip here, at the top of the reply slip is where your monthly giving ask is. It's where you're asking that donor for that 10, 15, or 20 that I talked about earlier. The second piece of that three-panel slip is the explanation of what a monthly donor is, how the program works, and most importantly, how they can get out of the program. And then the bottom slip is a single gift ask. The single gift ask is just so that you don't leave donors out there who don't want to join the program, but they may want to give you an extra gift. So the JDRF Care Circle here's some how they've done up to date. They've exceeded their goals. These people to them are worth over $182 per year, which is significantly more than their average donors are worth. These people drive higher retention and higher long-term value. Here's another metric, another method of creating monthly donors. Within this is a channel strategy that I've used for another client. What we did is we created an email, we created two emails, a direct mail piece, and then we had a telemarketing side of this. Within the email, we announced to the donors of the emails that we had that matched the direct mail addresses that we were starting, we had a monthly giving offer coming out, and we wanted them to join, but we told them we're sending a direct mail piece to you, so be on the lookout for it. The direct mail piece, we tried to have it arrive 2 or 3 days after, and then the follow-up email went out about a week and a half after that direct mail piece went out, and we tried to send it on kind of a Thursday or Friday, kind of end of the week type time frame. And then in each one of those, we gave the donor the option to opt out of a possible telemarketing call if they were part of the group that we knew were telemarketer, right, that we had a phone number for. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, we had a telemarketing campaign. Telemarketing is the best method to bring in monthly donors. You'll see response rates significantly higher than you will on email or direct mail, but this was a method we used for a client, and it was highly successful. Now, here's some other monthly giving strategies. You have a what I called a hybrid reply form, and that was the form that had the monthly giving at the top, followed by the explanations, followed by the one-time gifts. You can intermix these in into your regular renewal offers. What I would recommend you do is I wouldn't put these in your top 2 or 3 or 4 or even top 6 mailers. If you're mailing 12 times a year, these are places to put into your number 10, your number 11 spot, where you're not going to hurt revenue, but where you're going to try and bring in extra monthly donors. And it's a way of trying to raise extra revenue without hurting yourself by doing the monthly gift. The other thing that I've seen clients use is putting a simple insert into an acknowledgement package for a general donor donation. These inserts are actually activating new monthly donors. It surprised me on the one client that I know for a fact is using them, and they've been working pretty well. The other thing to think about for these monthly donor packages is if you can create gift linkages, $10 will buy X, Y, and Z, so that the donor knows what their $10 or what their $15 is buying every month. If you can create a visual picture for your donors, it will allow you to grow that donor. So monthly donors, monthly giving, and monthly giving takeaways. Monthly donors is a worthwhile investment to keep and to grow your core. It provides predictable revenue, and it's a strategy that I think a lot of organizations should try and begin to grow. So that's where we've ended. If there are any questions, I'll be willing to take them.
All right, thanks. This is Brett Ridge from CDS Global, and just checking in, and I'm going to try to help us through the question and answer a portion of the program here. And first of all, a lot of great information, and we've got probably 3 dozen questions online here, and I'm going to try to take these as close as I can in more of a thematic way. So I'll toss them out as sort of the most asked themes, I guess, here in the last couple of minutes. First off, one of those that we saw is if your donors are committed to a monthly giving program through maybe automatic withdrawals, is there any kind of a danger, in your opinion, of additional contacts during that time? You might do a couple things. You might remind them about money that comes out of their accounts, which they might have forgotten about, so they might stop, or they might be a little offended that you're asking them for more money when you've got them on a monthly program. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, with the monthly donors, inside the packages that you mail them, you want to acknowledge the fact that they're a monthly donor. If you acknowledge the fact that they're a monthly donor and you tell them that this is up and above, you need to communicate that clearly to them. But people that are monthly donors to you care about your organization, and you want to be able to reach out and touch them. And so asking them for another gift shouldn't alienate them. If anything, it should more bring them, it gives them more information about what you're doing.
All right. And I do want to make sure that everybody understands we have so many questions here. We will try to, if we don't get to everything here in the next 15 minutes, we'll try to have these answered in the daily e-letter that will be sent out, that is sent out. I'm not sure if everybody signed up for that. Margaret, can you address that?
Sure. It's our daily e-newsletter. It's called Today in Fundraising, and you can sign up for it on our website. It's at www.fundraisingsuccessmag.com. Go in there and sign up. It's free, and then when we finish up, we'll have the rest of the questions that weren't answered. We'll have those answered, and that'll be a feature in our e-newsletter, so you can make sure that you see all of the answers, okay?
Excellent. Okay, so another question that has come in from a couple of different people, and now I see that I thought that the last couple of slides there that kind of showed a multi-touch campaign sort of answered this, but if you had to choose, what are our presenters' positions on outreach through direct mail versus electronic outreach, and what are your thoughts if you had to choose between the two?
you use a direct mail piece. The electronic output, the emails, the response rates on emails are, from what I've seen in the past, are 1/5 or 1/7 the response you'll see in direct mail. People don't necessarily respond to emails the same way they do to a direct mail piece, but when you use them together, the combination of the two channels will increase response.
Yeah, and I think
and
we...
I would agree.
Go ahead.
I would agree that it's really important to put the two together because you have a lot of donors who are still going to respond to direct mail, but we have a growing number that are responding to email appeals. So if I had to choose... If I could absolutely only do one, I would do direct mail, but I would hope for an opportunity to do both because it's going to be much stronger if you can combine. As I said earlier, people who give more than one through more than one medium give more frequently and give more dollars, so we want to give them that opportunity.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Pamela.
Excellent. Okay. Well, now, a couple of people have asked about giving levels and exactly how you should name those. Is it important more to include sort of the monetary part of that level, or is it something important more to kind of come up with sort of clever ways to assign importance to those levels?
I think giving levels, I've seen them named simple names. I've seen them named partner and gold partner. I've seen gold, silver, bronze used. I've seen emergency action. You know, you can try and relate the name to your organization. What you want to do is you want to make definite improvements as they go up in level. I haven't seen where if you use a gold, silver, bronze versus an emergency action team necessarily change the response to these organizations. It's just a matter of what your executive director feels comfortable going out with.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, sometimes the names can help if they really relate, but I wouldn't put all my effort into creating names as much as I would into creating the messages that we're going to be sending to the donor.
Mm-hmm.
I try to avoid being too creative because sometimes what sounds really great when we're in our conference rooms brainstorming doesn't relate very well to the average donor.
Well, and I think that's a great point, and it kind of leads me into wondering kind of the difference between, you know, a lot of different organizations approach these as memberships rather than donation levels and that type of with that type of a scenario. Do you see that makes any difference, or that they feel like they're becoming a member of a level or a member, or are they okay with just being a donor, or does that change anything one way or the other?
I found that donors often consider themselves members if you tell them they are or not. You know, donors will say, I'm a member of, and you haven't really called it member, but definitely if they feel a sense of belonging, both that you're depending on them and they're really kind of almost the backbone of your organization, they're going to get more involved. Jeff?
No, I couldn't have said it better myself. I totally agree with you. I mean, the only thing I think I could add to that would be by creating the member levels, you give them steps to be able to go up.
Okay. Well, how about anything in regard to corporate strategies? Is there anything different that you look at with more corporate donors versus individual donors?
You want to start, Jeff, and I'll jump in later?
That's usually a topic for this particular.
I mean, I know a lot of what we focus on here is we focus on the individual donors. I mean, your corporate donors a lot of times are your major donor focus folks to begin with, is from what I've seen. Pamela, I mean, I'm not sure if you can...
Yeah, I would agree that oftentimes people, corporate givers are more major. They're possibly more interested in sponsorships of an event, for example. I would keep my tone a little bit more business-like with them, but again, corporations don't want to give money to failing enterprises or to things that they really don't know about. So making sure that they also know about your successes, that you're communicating enough with them, that they know what the good things that you're doing is still really important. There's a business relationship, but it's also got to corporations need to know that they're really making a difference in the community. They're getting hit up by a lot of community groups and a lot of other even national groups. So you want them to know that they're really making a difference by supporting your organization. So, again, giving them that kind of feedback is very, very important. They're not going to be as involved in like a monthly club, most likely, because that's probably not how they give. But they still want to be informed of what you're doing and receive appreciation, recognition, and reporting.
Okay. Well, moving on a little bit, a couple of other things that are being thrown out here. And I think it's interesting to look at when you start looking at attracting sort of higher level donors. Maybe even you're just looking at $100 or month or more per month. When you have a $30 program available or a $25 program available, how do you sort of promote within the program to try to make sure that people are giving at the appropriate level for them?
You know, a lot of times we're going to, on these programs, we're going to be looking at the donor's past, how they've given in the past, how they have given more recently. And, you know, oftentimes this is where the levels will come in. You'll have one program for monthly givers at, you know, $25 a month, one at $50, maybe one at only $10 or $15. The ultimate goal is to raise the donor's giving. And if you've got a donor who gives to you twice a year and they give $50 each time, obviously if you can get them to give monthly and only give $10 a month, you've increased their value by 20%. So you want to not set your levels so high that it's a deterrent for people to get involved. You can always try and upgrade them in a monthly giving program just like you try and upgrade them in single gift fundraising. But you don't want, so I would avoid setting this barrier so high that it becomes almost a fright. You know, they look at it and go, you've got to be kidding. I can't commit to that every month.
Yeah, and that's to follow up there. I mean, in terms of setting the level, if you're going to create a mid-level type of program, that's where you have to know what your donors are. I used $100 as an example, but that mid-level program could easily be for another organization, could start at $25. So, and then to follow in with Margaret, what Pamela said, that from there it would flow up.
A couple of questions coming in from some smaller organizations of just where to start. If they have to choose where to start on something and they have very limited resources, first steps for the limited resources.
Well, I've worked for a lot of organizations with limited resources, and some of my clients now are in that boat. So what I would look at first is putting my effort into really making sure I'm keeping my existing donors. Before I even go out to acquire new ones, I would make sure that my existing donors are having a fantastic relationship with me, that they feel very connected, feel very informed. I would be very proactive on not letting them lapse or trying not to let them lapse. And then I would look for ways to acquire new donors that are perhaps lower cost. You know, when you're a smaller organization, it's tougher because you have less money, but it's also sometimes easier because you can have more personal relationships with your donors. One great way to get new donor names for free is ask your donors to provide you with referrals. Oftentimes the person who they refer is similar to them and they're going to like your organization. So a simple insert asking for referral names. You follow that up with a letter. Usually about 1 in 10 of those donor people will become donors to your organization as well, and that's free acquisition. So that's where I would be starting.
Okay. From a logistics standpoint, I think this is kind of interesting. How are you seeing people do acknowledgments for the monthly donations? So in other words, somebody makes a pledge to donate monthly, and that starts happening. Are they getting acknowledgments sent every time that monthly donation is processed, or is that something that's happening towards the end of the year, and what would you recommend on that?
With something like that, a lot of times with your monthly donors, if you can get an email address just as a, you know, we are going to charge your credit card for your monthly gift, but I wouldn't be sending out and investing in an acknowledgement package each time. You do need to get a, what I would call a tax receipt package ready to go that would drop sometime January 15th, which would acknowledge their year's worth of giving. And that way it also, it gives you another chance to put a BRE or an ARE inside that ask. To ask for another gift, and then what I've also seen those packages do with tax receipts is that at that point in time, the charities will then say, you've been giving $10 a month, would you consider giving $12.50 a month? And so they use the tax receipt as a dual communication piece that allows the person to ask for a larger monthly gift and provides a tax receipt for the donor to use when they're working with the IRS.
Yeah, and I actually give monthly to two different organizations, and the one sends me a receipt every month, which quite frankly feels like overkill. The other one sends me a receipt quarterly. I like quarterly because you're staying in touch with donors, you're giving them a chance to be reminded of their giving. It helps remind them of what you're doing, how much good you're doing with their donation, but it doesn't feel like overkill. And then definitely getting out that tax letter early. I received a few tax letters from nonprofits after I'd already completed my taxes this year. So you have to really be on the ball and get those out early with your monthly donors.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, any suggestions? This is kind of a data gathering question for gathering information from direct mail respondents, especially email addresses.
Ask, and ask again. Every place you can, you need to ask for that information. And if possible, give them a reason. When you provide your email address, we'll send you something that's worthwhile. I like to see, why do you want my email address? I know you're going to write me, but what's in it for me? What's the benefit? So I would be asking everywhere, but also, have an opportunity to, tell people why. Tell them, this month we're going to send out this exciting new report that's available only on email. And so would you, provide your email address?
A great suggestion.
And I would just add to that, if you're a larger organization that would have a great number of direct mail respondents coming in, large volume, there are outsourced companies, one of which for whom I work, that can do all of that automatically if you really wanted to do that. It can be done with electronics and through technology. So it's not like you would have to have somebody sitting there waiting through all of that. And yet, on the other hand, I would say that we've been encouraging more and more of our organizations that work with us to continue to ask as well. They seem to be a little bit gun-shy about asking for that information when they don't get it the first time, but people eventually will give it to you, and I love the idea of explaining to them why you want it, because they'll be much more likely to do that. So that's a great suggestion. As you move forward. Let's see, boy, we've got another 50 questions out here. Any drawbacks to using an average gift to kind of determine the ask amounts that you're going with? Is there any drawbacks to where you might be missing something?
Asking the average gift in a monthly, asking average
well,
gift
I mean,
in
it, yeah, level? If you're looking at their average gift, is there any drawback to looking at that as to the way that it should suggest to you the level at which you should ask now? Is there a drawback to that? Are you going to fall short at some point in time, overshoot the mark, or is that about right?
Well, There's no perfect amount.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you could use highest previous contribution too. Like Pamela said, it's just a matter of you kind of need to learn the look and feel of the way your donors respond, and test. Be aggressive in testing and put out the average gift, put out the highest previous gift, put out the most recent gift, and see what is going to produce the highest response rate for you.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah,
thanks, guys.
I was just going to say, I used to look at average gift in the last 12 months, because sometimes that's more what the donor's really capable of, but you're just going to have to experiment.
Well, okay. Hey, I appreciate you guys letting me kind of fire fast and furious. I, have loved the reaction here. We've got so many people asking questions, so that's been a great 20 minutes. I'll toss it back to Margaret to sign off, and from CDS Global, thanks to everybody for helping out today.
We will. We could talk about this for another hour, but we will do our best to get the rest of our questions answered and get them out, get it out as a feature in Today in Fundraising. So be sure to sign up for our free e-letter. On behalf of Fundraising Success and CDS Global, I want to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. It was a lot of fun on our end. Hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out our webinar page at fundraisingsuccessmag.com to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And I hope to see you at one of those future Fundraising Success webinars. Thanks, everybody.